निर्विघ्नेनैव कर्तव्यं दासोऽहं तव केशवाम् भवे भवे यथा भक्ति पादयोस्तव जायते तदा कुरुष्व देवेश नाथस्त्वं नो यद प्रभो नाम संकीर्तनं यस्य सर्वभाव प्रणाशनं प्रणामो दुःखशमनं तं नमामि हरिं परम् जन्माद्यस्य यतोऽन्वयाद्विदरदश्चार्तेषु अभिज्ञस्वराल्तेने ब्रह्महृद य आदिगवये मुह्यन्दियल् सूरयाः तेजो वारिमृदं यथा विनिमयो यत्र त्रिसर्गो मृषा धाम्ना स्वेन सदा निरस्तकुहकं सत्यं परं धीमहि धर्म प्रोज्जितगैदवोऽत्र परमो निर्मल्सराणां सदां वेद्यं वास्तवमत्र वस्तु शिवदं तापत्रयोन्मूलनम् श्रीमल्भागवते महामुनिकृते किं वा परे ईश्वरः सद्यो हृद्यवरुद्यनेत्र कृतिभि शुश्रूषुभि तल्क्षणाल् निगमकल्पतरोर्गलितं फलम् शुकमुखादमृतद्रवसंयुतं पिबद भागवतं रसमालयं मुहुरहो रसिका भुवि भावुकाः सच्चिदानन्दरूपाय विश्वोत्पत्यादिहेतवे तापत्रय विनाशाय श्रीकृष्णाय वयं नुमाम् यं प्रव्रजन्तम् अनुपेदम् अपेदकृत्यं द्वैपायनो विरहकादरम् अजुहाव पुत्रेति तन्मयतया तरवोऽभिनेतु तं सर्वभूतहृदयं मुनिम् आनदोऽस्मि यस्वानुभावमखिलश्रुतिसारमेकम् अध्यात्मदीपम् अतिथिदीर्षदां तमोऽन्धम् संसारिणां करुणयाः पुराणगुह्यं तं व्यासूनम् उपयामि गुरुं मुनीनां नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेल् कमनीयकिशोरमुग्धमूर्ते कलवेणुकुणिदादृदाननेन्दोः मम वाजि विजृम्भदा मुरारेर्मधुरीं न कनिकापि कापि कापि नमः ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमदे भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन् इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवीं गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादि पाश्चात्यदेशधारिणे श्रीमल्गुरुचरणारविन्दाभ्यां नमः वन्दे नन्दं व्रजस्त्रीणां पादरेणुमभीष्णश यासां हरिगतोद्गीतं पुनादि भुवनत्रयं गोपीचरणारविन्दपरमाणवे नमः पीताम्बरं करविराजितचक्रशङ्खकौमोदगी सरसिजं करुणासमुद्रं राधासहायमतिसुन्दरमन्दहासम् वातालयेश मनिशं हृदि भावयामि श्रीकृष्णाय नमः कोमलं कूजयन् वेणुं श्यामलोऽयं कुमारग वेदवेद्यपरं ब्रह्म भासदां पुरतो मम मूकं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यल्कृवातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम् So, in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, there are a lot of prayers to Krishna and also prayers to Srimad Bhagavatam itself, which is not different from Krishna. Krishna and Srimad Bhagavatam are one and the same. We shouldn't think that Bhagavatam is just a book referring to Krishna. In fact, Krishna has confirmed that Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna himself. That is why it's mentioned, Srimad Bhagavata Akhyoyam Pratyaksha Krishna Mevahi. And because Krishna is not different from Srimad Bhagavatam, our prayers to Srimad Bhagavatam is also based on the understanding that if Krishna wants us to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, it's only possible to understand Bhagavatam by Krishna's grace. Otherwise it is not possible to understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam, in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, the commentators also praise to Krishna for his causeless mercy. By Krishna's grace one can understand Srimad Bhagavatam because Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna. It's not different from Krishna. Just like we can't understand Krishna, similarly we can't understand Srimad Bhagavatam also. So both are on the same level. Or to understand Bhagavatam without Krishna's grace, it is not possible. That is how the conclusion of all the great scholars on the Srimad Bhagavatam is. So, while Krishna was departing from this world, Uddhava asked Krishna, where will you be present? And the answer Krishna has given was, Tirodhaya pravishtoham Srimal Bhagavadarnamam. If you want to look for me, you don't look for him anywhere, look for me anywhere else except in the Srimal Bhagavatam. Tirodhaya pravishtoham Srimal Bhagavadarnamam. I will enter into Bhagavatam at the time when I depart from this world. This is what Krishna has told Uddhava. Krishna has told Uddhava while departing from this world. So from then on, after Krishna left this planet and went back to his own abode, Goloka Vrindavana, people have been searching for Krishna from last 5,000 years through Srimad Bhagavatam. And the result is that did they see Krishna? They have found Krishna in the Bhagavatam. And that is why Srimad Bhagavatam is so dear to the devotees of Krishna. They know that Krishna is present in the Bhagavatam. If properly understood and properly studied Bhagavatam, one can find Shri Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead in Bhagavatam. And confirming this in the end of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Sudha Goswami and the sages who are present in the Naimisharanyam, who are listening to Srimad Bhagavatam from Sudha Goswami continuously for 7 days, they ask this question, and in answer to that, Sudha Goswami said to Shaunaka Rishi and others who were present there that the that this Bhagavadam Puranamamalam Srimal Bhagavadam Puranamamalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam Yasmin Paramahamsya Megamamalam Jnanam Param Giyade. That what is the speciality of Srimal Bhagavadam? The speciality is that Srimal Bhagavadam Puranamamalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. That among all the Puranas, it is the spotless Puranam. In other words, they cannot find any fault in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Reason being that it has been spoken. It is actually the essence of all the Vedic literature. It has been it has been churned. All the Vedic literature has been churned. And from that Vedic literature, the nectar has been taken out. The essence of all the Vedic literature. And Vedavyasa Maharshi presented that in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, Bhagavadam Srimal Bhagavadam Puranamamalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. It is very, very dear to the Vaishnavas or the devotees of the Supreme Lord. Yasmin Paramahamsa Vegamamalam Jnanam Param Giyadem. And the type of people who generally read Srimal Bhagavadam and who relish Srimal Bhagavadam are the Paramahamsas. Paramahamsas means one who has gone beyond, transcended this material modes of nature. Or they are beyond the three modes of material nature, and therefore Yasmin Paramahamsa Megamamalam Jnanam Param Giyadem. And the knowledge in the Bhagavadam is also so high that Jnanam Param Giyadem, that the sages are singing the topmost knowledge. They are put in this form of verses in the Bhagavadam, the topmost knowledge in the spiritual world, that is the knowledge in the Srimad Bhagavadam. Yatra jnana viraga bhakti sahidam naishkarmyam avishkritam yal krinvan vipadan vicharanavaro bhaktiya vimuchernara. So what will happen is, if one seriously starts studying Srimad Bhagavatam, it will change the person's life completely, in the sense that yatra jnana viraga bhakti sahidam, that there are three things which goes together in this world. Generally, Jnanam, Vairagyam and Bhakti. These are the three things. They three things go together. If they are not, one cannot be absent from them. Because Srimad Bhagavatam has been compiled in that way, that one who studies or takes shelter of Bhagavatam, he automatically has the Jnanam, knowledge, Vairagyam, renunciation and Bhakti, devotion. So these three things, they go together. Yatra jnana viraga bhakti sahidam. And not only they go together, naishkaramyam avishkritam, that the vasana or the propensity for performing karma also goes away from a person. That this karma is the thing which, according to the Vedic concept and Vedic philosophy, it is a karma that has brought us to this material world. And although karma has brought us, and all of us have accepted this material body due to our own prarabdha karma, or the karma that is likely to fructify in this particular material body, when that prarabdha karma, which is known as the prarabdha karma, when that prarabdha karma is finished, yal shrunven naishkarmam avishkritam yal shrunven, if one who hears Bhagavatam very carefully every day and study Bhagavatam and try to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, what will happen to that person? Yal shrunven vipathan vicharanavaro. Not only is just hearing Bhagavatam is enough, it is shravanam has to be followed by what is known as mananam. Mananam means what is that is gone in what has been heard through the ears, that should be churned in the mind, or it should be thought about it very well, carefully. One has to think about it. Yet shrinvan, not only here, vibhadan, then he should study the book, study Srimad Bhagavatam very seriously. Vicharana varom, then if he, vicharana means constantly thinking about it and analyzing it in one's own mind, what one has heard from Srimad Bhagavatam. Yal shrinvan vibhadan vicharana varo, what will be the result? Bhaktya vimuchernara. That automatically the devotion develops in the heart of a person. This is the shastram of bhakti. Bhakti is science of bhakti. This is how it is explained by Vedavyasa Maharshi and all the other great saints and sages who came in the bhakti tradition. They have all given so much importance to the hearing process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, that Rupa Goswami also mentions this, and all the other Goswamis also spend considerable amount of time in their life in hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the potency of Srimad Bhagavatam. And this Bhagavatam has affected everybody. In fact, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Rupa Goswami to compile the science of devotion, which is the nectar of devotion, Rupa Goswami didn't have to refer anywhere else. Basically, all the information, all the science of bhakti process is from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And a person who hears Srimad Bhagavatam regularly, his outlook in life also changes. He doesn't think about this life in purely in terms of material consciousness. It gives to understand for that person that Srimad Bhagavatam is pure knowledge, and that knowledge also develops detachment from this material world. Renunciation comes as a part of that. So one who is reading Srimad Bhagavatam is bound to develop a certain degree of detachment or renunciation to this material world, and also act in a way that will contribute or that will help in developing the devotion within the heart. Yal shrunvan vipadan vijarana varo bhaktya vimuchernaraha. And then finally, above all, then all these things, that person is released from the three modes of nature. He is released from that vimuchernaraha, that he gets freedom from the three modes of material nature. So that is the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam. And who should hear Srimad Bhagavatam? That is also discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam itself. In the beginning of the first canto, you will see that Bhagavatam has to be heard by somebody who has come to one firm conclusion in life. And what is that conclusion? Anyone who has come to the point of understanding that death is following him every minute like a shadow. And that is how the reality is like that. It is like a shadow behind us, any time ready to close its mouth. It's like, and immediately we become the food for the death. Well, that is our position in this material world, and that we can't change. And this is why there is so much stress on the impending death, what is waiting behind us any moment to take us away from this world, and not knowing what the next destination will be. So Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for those people who are aware of this danger which is chasing or which is following a person. Generally, most of the people have serious business in this world to do, and they are most of the time busy with that, with their activities in this world, and that is what keeps them going in this world. But Srimad Bhagavatam says that no matter how nicely you have done your activities in this world, you have performed your karma, or whatever activities one is doing, that death has no time. It doesn't give you a warning any time that such and such a date I will leave this world with all myself organized properly. It doesn't happen like that. Death can happen any time for any one of us. And that is our actual position in this world. Once, many years, many times, this issue has been discussed, and even Krishna has discussed this issue. In the Bhagavatam also, you will find Krishna referring to that, even in the Bhagavad Gita also. One who is conscious of these things should study Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the conclusion. And to teach us that perfect example of Parikshit Maharaj has been shown in the Srimad Bhagavatam. When Parikshit Maharaj came to know that he has only 7 days' time left in this world, immediately he threw away all his royal position and all the royal comforts, everything. He threw it away and walked away from the palace to prepare himself for death. This is the attitude, or this is the mind of those great personalities. Parikshit Maharaj was such a great devotee in his early days in life that he knew that to prepare himself for death is the most glorious thing. And from the Vedic viewpoint, this is the purpose of human life, to prepare oneself for death. The Vedic culture or the Vedic thoughts are not based on anything else than that mrityu, or the death that follows our life in this world. And to come out of this cycle of birth and death, mrityoma amrdangamaya, that somehow or the other one should free oneself, and it is an opportunity given to us in this human form of body. Labdhva sudurlabhamidam bahu sambhavande manushyam arthadam anityam abhihadhirah. In the Bhagavatam, while referring to this, Krishna has spoken about death in so many places. In the Bhagavatam, everywhere you will find reference to death. Krishna is saying, talking about death, death, death. One thinks, why Krishna is referring to death so many times? Not only in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita also. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha doshanu darshanam. That mrityu or death is considered to be the most important thing in one's life. And before that death happens, if one does not prepare oneself for that, Krishna says he has lost a golden opportunity. Labdhva sudurlabhamidam bahu sambhavande manushyam arthadam anityam abhihadhirah. Turnam padedyade anumrtidaval nishreyasaya vishaya khalu sarvadasyal. Krishna says, why one should go to such a degree of struggle in this world simply to establish himself here? After all, he hasn't got much choice to live here. Nobody can say that I will live for a very long period of time or forever. That's not possible. Krishna says that you haven't got that option. You have only one option, that you have a certain few years of lifetime in this world. If you use it properly, labdhva sudurlabhamidam bahu sambhavande manushyam arthadam anityam apihadirah. Then Krishna says that this opportunity what you have in this human life is so precious, so valuable to develop. It's meant for developing Krishna consciousness. If one do not do that, one loses a great opportunity. Turnam padedyadet anumurti daval nishreyasaya vishaya khalu sarvadasyal. If he does not do that, then what will happen is one day the body will drop off, whether we want it or not. And what will happen then? Nishreyasaya vishaya khalu sarvadasyal. If he simply engages the body in sense gratification, that you lost an opportunity. Not only that, our further karmic reactions follows that and accept another material body. So this is an opportunity Krishna has given to us. And while discussing with Uddhava, this question came up about death. Uddhava asked Krishna that I have no idea about death. We have some idea about birth, because when we take birth, we know we come to this world, we get into this body and come here. But about death, we have no knowledge. So, and Krishna tried to explain to Uddhava at that time that death is not something so much to worry about, because the death, nature of the death is that mrityu atyanta vispradi, that it is something, a total forgetfulness of our identification in this body and moving on to a different body. And when we leave this body and identify with another body, that process is called as death. That is simple terms Krishna puts it. But if somebody is trying very, very hard to make themselves comfortable in this world, Krishna says they are not very intelligent, because Krishna's words are Akhadam niyamanasya vadya sevana tushtidah. Krishna says like this to Uddhava, that somebody has been condemned to die. He has been condemned to die. Every one of us, we have one day, we will be, by the laws of material nature, we have to leave this world. We have to leave this world. So if you ask somebody, how are you in this world? He says, oh, I'm fine, he says. Everybody, each other, you see all the time people greeting each other. We greet each other, how are you? I'm fine, thanks. You should not go further than that, because if you go further, the next step, if you ask, so where are you going? I'm just going to the chemist to get some medicine. So I'm fine, but they say I'm just going to the chemist because doctor sent me there with the prescription to get some medicine. This is how fine I am. So this is our so-called fineness. And this I'm fine will not go very far. It only finishes, as long as you stop there, it's fine. But if you ask a little bit deeper, so where are you going now? Oh, I'm just going to the chemist to get my medicines, because doctor says I should have all these medicines every day, a few tablets in the morning, a few in the evening, like this. So this is the so-called the welfare of this material world. So Krishna is saying there that if somebody has been condemned or to be killed, and what is the possibility that that person will be happy? Is there any possibility of somebody who has been condemned to die, will he be happy anytime? It's not possible. And this is our reality, the real situation of all of us is like that. We haven't got much of a time, nor we have a lot of, we have got any strength to fight against the impending death. And Krishna comes in the form of death. Mrityu sarva harashchaham. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that I am that death, Krishna says. For those who do not believe that I exist, or those who find it difficult or hard to accept me, Mrityu sarva harashchaham. I am that death, Krishna says. I come in that form and take him away from his body. And that's the end of everything. So, if in that situation, what should Krishna says, what one should do? One should be constantly aware of all the time, aware of this impending death waiting behind him. And when that happens, it only takes a few minutes or few seconds, and when it closes its mouth, immediately we have become the food for death. That's the end of our so-called so-called life and career in this world. All that's finished at that point. So we were discussing last week about the Prithu Maharaj story, the Maharaj Prithu. And in the history, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the reason for bringing Prithu Maharaj life, and although there were so many other kings who appeared in the dynasty of Dhruva Maharaj, this Prithu Maharaj story has this special significance, because no time before, never even in the later on, up to up to the time of Sukadeva Goswami, that Vedavyasa Maharshi has found an emperor who has done so much for the people which never in the history existed. Although when Krishna was present in this planet, people had everything. All the material necessities were provided very happily by the material nature. Everything was given. But Prithu Maharaj's case is slightly different than even Krishna's time here. In Prithu Maharaj's time, when Prithu Maharaj took over the administration, you will notice in the Bhagavatam, there is a big change in the living conditions of the society at that time. Basically because Prithu Maharaj's father, Vena, he established a system whereby the existence of the Supreme Lord was denied completely. And not only that, he also stopped the practice of spiritual life. Or in other words, religious life was banned totally. Something like the situation in many places in this world, even today, it is like that. That there are certain administration, government comes into power. And due to the influence of the lower modes of nature, and unable to see the reality of life behind all these things, that they accept, they think that by their effort alone, they can improve the material conditions. And their responsibility is only to improve the material conditions of life or the people. Even in that process, they often fail. They never succeed in that. So anyway, it was in one of those situations there, in Vena's time also, Vena decided that at any cost, he wanted that people should stop worshipping, people should stop the worship of the Supreme Lord, and all spiritual practices, religious life, everything was totally banned. The result was that, after a period of time, Mother Earth pulled back all her supply to the human society, and she told Maharaj Prithu that I have very, very specific instruction from the Supreme Lord that I have to feed only those people who are engaged in serving the Supreme Lord, or those who do not fulfill their part of the obligations, I have no duty to supply them their necessities of life. The result was that as soon as King Vena died, and by then the whole society was degraded to such a degree that they didn't have enough food to eat. They were starving, most of the whole population was starving, and the whole population had no proper residence to stay, no proper places to stay. Nor, in addition to that, they also had no water to drink. And altogether, there were so many illnesses and diseases spread all over the country. And at the same time, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is ruling the country, is ruling the planet. This is the most interesting thing. Prithu Maharaj comes in and takes over the administration, and the people are suffering in this condition, in this way. So they came up all together one day and complained to Prithu Maharaj that this is our unfortunate situation. We are like this. We have no food to eat. We have nothing to drink. Water, there is scarcity. There is no proper place to stay and full of diseases. And everything, every material distress you can perhaps perceive in one's life was present there at that time. And it was in that time of the, in that Satyuga, later on in the Kaliyuga, this was happening. And Prithu Maharaj was struck with wonder, and he said to them that this should not have happened because you are not executing your religious practices properly. So the people said to him that your father has banned everything. They have stopped all the religious activities, and this is the result what we have today. So Prithu Maharaj at that point told them that the first thing to do is to come back into our obligations towards the Supreme Lord. And he started engaging them in spiritual practices. And that's, but there was not enough time to do all that. So therefore, he called Bhumi Devi and requested her to supply all the necessities of life to this human society. Because there was not enough time to perform spiritual activities, to perform religious principles, and then to wait for the result. That's going to take time. And it's going to be a long time. Therefore, Prithu Maharaj decided that he invite Bhumi Devi and request Mother Earth to supply the necessities, and that is what we find the long discussion between Bhumi Devi and Prithu Maharaj in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this discussion goes on for a while, and later on you will notice there Prithu Maharaj managed to bring the standard of material standard of life to a very high degree for the whole population. Not only he did that, it is the first time in the history that villages, cities and towns were established in the human society. It is Prithu Maharaj who built towns first of all, and the cities, and also villages. For the difference in the prior to that, Bhagavatam says that these differences in dwellings didn't exist. People lived everywhere in all sorts of situations. But Prithu Maharaj decided that people should have comfortable lifestyles for them, and he organized the city way of life, the village way of life, and also the towns. All these things have come into Prithu Maharaj created them first time in the history. It was then Prithu Maharaj decided to perform the Ashwamedha sacrifices. Ashwamedham is one of the sacrifices which requires tremendous amount of investment, money and energy required. Generally, Ashwamedha sacrifices are not performed normally by the Kshatriya kings. Only big, big, powerful emperors did Ashwamedha sacrifices. You can see all the history of Ashwamedha sacrifices are mentioned in some of the Puranas and also in some of the Brahmanas. In the Vedas, they reference to that. So, normal conditions, Ashwamedha sacrifices are performed only by emperors. And if you look back into the history, even right up to about 5,000 years, there is no reference to Ashwamedha sacrifice performed by anybody. The last Ashwamedha sacrifice we find from the history is at the time when Yudhishthira Maharaj performed Ashwamedha. That is the last history of Ashwamedha sacrifice. After that, there is no sign of any Ashwamedha sacrifices mentioned there. So it is this Ashwamedha sacrifices what was planned by Prithu Maharaj, who decided to perform them, Ashwamedha sacrifices, for the benefit of the human society. So he started performing them. Generally, before performing Ashwamedha sacrifices, the emperor has to let loose a horse to wander around. And this horse is accompanied by many of the servants of the king who just watch the horse movements. And if any king who actually challenges the emperor, he should try to catch the horse and tie it down. And that is when the war happens between the emperor and the king, whoever has tried to question the authority of the emperor. But if the horse comes back without being questioned by any king, it is understood that the emperor has the total authority on all the kings. And this is how the Ashwamedha sacrifices, which lasts over a year, the horse is let loose to wander around. And after that, the horse is brought back and then tied, and the sacrifice, actual sacrifice begins, which lasts for months together. So this is a general nature of the Ashwamedha sacrifice. So Indra, in the in the heavenly planets, he has performed this Ashwamedha sacrifices, which brings overall prosperity to the performer, to the person who performs these sacrifices. And Indra has performed many of these Ashwamedha sacrifices before, and therefore he was given the title as Shatakradu. Shatakradu means one who has performed Ashwamedha for 100 times. 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices Indra has performed, and therefore he was referred to as Shatakradu. So our Prithu Maharaj also wanted to perform these Ashwamedha sacrifices, and he started one after the other. So earlier, when the first 98 or 99 sacrifices went very well, there was no problem. There was no problem with any of the first 99 sacrifices. And the place where Prithu Maharaj performed these Ashwamedha sacrifices is known as Brahmavartam. Brahmavartam means the land which is lying between the Ganges and the Yamuna, and that part of the world is considered to be very auspicious for performing sacrifices. It is from the time immemorial, it is like that, that this particular place, particular land lying between the Ganges and the Yamuna, that particular land is considered to be the most suitable place for performing sacrifices. Why? Generally, there is an understanding that Kali has no entrance to that place. Kali has no entrance to that place. To a large degree, even it is true today, that the influence of Kali has not gone to such a degree there compared to many other places what we find in this world, even in India. To a large degree, it is like that. So Brahmavartam, from time immemorial, is known as one of the most auspicious places for performing sacrifices. So it is there that Prithu Maharaj performed his Ashwamedha sacrifices. So while performing these sacrifices, the first 99 sacrifices went on very well. There was not a big problem there. Emperor Prithu was reaping the benefit also, because as much as the sacrifices were going on very well, the material necessities which were necessities for the human population was supplied in bulk by Bhumidevi. Bhumidevi profusely started supplying the grains, vegetables, milk, everything what was required for the human society, jewelry and gold, ornaments, everything was coming in abundant supply. And Prithu Maharaj realized that Bhumidevi is doing her duty now, so he let her go without killing her. And Bhumidevi actually helped the human population, and the material living conditions of the society improved considerably at that time. This is how it is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So when these things happened, after the 99th sacrifice, Prithu Maharaj wanted to continue more further sacrifices, because he was seeing the result was coming. Every Vedic sacrifice has one problem. Problem is this, that you perform the sacrifice properly, and when the result starts coming, you will get attached to it. It is natural that if somebody gives you a result of your work, everybody likes the result, right, to have the result. Nobody is free from that desire. That result is always there, the desire for result. So same thing, Prithu Maharaj was also experiencing. Results were coming, so he wanted to perform. But when the 100th sacrifice came, Indra in the heavenly planet started getting a bit worried. He started thinking, till now there was only one Shatakradu, one person who has done 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices. If Prithu Maharaj does the 100, another one more sacrifice, will there not be two Shatakradus in this world? It will be, one will be me and one will be Prithu Maharaj. So what's my importance then? So this started disturbing Indra's mind. You can see this person, Indra, is not very much different from us. He has the same, precisely the same qualities as what we have in this world. We also have the similar problems. If somebody who is struggling very hard and he makes some money in this world, and he improves his material life, or he develops some material opulences, immediately others get talking about it. Why is he? How is he made that? How did he make it? And he also feels that, oh, I've done well now. Poor man has worked hard day and night and struggled very hard to improve his conditions. But it becomes a matter of discussions from many other people and how he did that. So this same problem, it's not, that is why I'm saying that we have a very subtle relationship with Indra. It's not so straightforward, but in consciousness we have also a similar relationship with Indra. So Indra was questioning, Indra wanted to find out why this was happening and why Prithviraj has to do another sacrifice and make it 100, why can't he stop it now? So he thought very hard about it and he wanted to put an end to it, so he decided ultimately that the things are not going to stop. So he came down to this world one day and and you know what the word is used in the Bhagavatam referring to Indra? Asuyo Bhagavan Indra. In other words, Bhagavan also can become envious sometimes. That's what it means. Asuyo Bhagavan Indra. Bhagavan Indra, he has also become envious. Can you imagine that he is Bhagavan? He is referred to in the Bhagavatam as Bhagavan. Asuyo Bhagavan Indra. Asuya means envy. So Indra also become envious and decided to do something about it. So what did he do? He came down to this world and in Brahmavartam he saw that Prithu Maharaj's horse was moving around in Brahmavartam, and he decided that best thing is to steal that horse. So that is first thing he decided to do. He wanted to steal that horse, because if the horse is stolen, then you don't have the horse for the sacrifice, because you earmark this particular horse for the sacrifice and you wait till the horse comes back. And Prithu Maharaj did not have this problem before, but here this horse was, which was wandering around, Indra decided to steal that horse. So after the horse was let loose after a year, the horse didn't return back. And the people who were looking after the horse, they couldn't find the horse anywhere. They looked, but they couldn't find where the horse is gone. They searched everywhere. The horse has gone missing. When Indra has taken the horse away, they couldn't see Indra, because he is a demigod. He can come to this world in disguise. And they have this special ability. In Brahma Sutram, if you read, there is commentary on the Brahma Sutram. If you read there is reference to the demigod's position. They can come to these planets without being noticed by us. And that is how even they come, even in the sacrifices, and receive the offerings from them. And they are present, they can be present here unnoticed by us. That is their special capacity. And when Indra came here and took the horse away from here, the group of people who were looking for the horse, they couldn't find. They searched and they couldn't find it. Eventually, they ended up in Atri Maharshi's ashram. Atri was a great sage, one of the great sages mentioned in the Bhagavatam in the third canto. They went into this ashram of Atri Maharshi, the sage Atri. Atri Maharshi was transcendentally situated in trance in his ashram when Prithu Maharaj's own son, Vijitashva his name, he came there and saw Atri Maharshi situated in a transcendental mood. He paid his respects to Atri Maharshi and completely frustrated of not able to find the horse, he asked Atri Maharshi, we are in this situation, a difficult situation, that it is the 100th Ashwamedha sacrifice of Prithu Maharaj, horse has gone missing and we do not know where he is. Atri Maharshi, through his Jnana Chakshusa, Jnana Chakshusa means through the eye of knowledge, that means he could move away from the three states of existence, that means Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti, or in other words, waking state, dream state and the deep sleep. When one crosses over these three states of existence, he is situated in the Samadhi state or in the Turiya state, as it says in the Shastra. So at that time, your vision of things changes. You can see things beyond what you can see from your material eyes, with the naked eyes. What you can see, things which cannot be seen by these naked eyes, can be seen through the eyes, what's available in that situation. So Atri Maharshi was able to look through his Jnana Chakshus, or the knowledge, eyes of knowledge, and there he found Indra carrying this horse away from there. And he saw in the sky Indra taking this horse away. And what did he look like? Indra has changed his dress. He never looked like Indra anymore. He has taken more or less the dress of Lord Shiva. In other words, he had a matted hair, and he was wearing ashes all over the body. Then and he was very much dressed like a sannyasi, more like a sannyasi, and like a Lord Shiva, dressed like a sannyasi's form, he has taken like that, and he was taking the horse away from the Brahmavartam to the heavenly planet. So he told Vijidashva, that is Pradumayarad's son, touch me and look at him and see what is going on. Vijidashva looked as Atri Maharshi told him to look at, and what he saw was that this one sannyasi was carrying the horse away from there. And Atri Maharshi said to him, go and get that horse back, tell him to give the horse back to you. Vijidashva went there, and when he got there, this sannyasi said to him, oh, you have come to get your horse back, have you? This was the question Indra put forward. So Vijidashva was a little bit hesitant to ask, because seeing a sannyasi going away with a horse, he was a little bit confused. And he was hesitant to ask for the horse to be given back. But before Vijidashva asked him, Indra offered this horse back to him and told him, here the horse, take it away and go back. He said, this is your horse, he said. Oh, you can take it back, there's no problem with it, he said. Vijidashva took the horse and came back. When he was coming back, Atri Maharshi told him, what did you say to him? He said, well, before I did ask for the horse, he has handed over the horse back to me and I brought it back. Atri Maharshi told Vijidashva that you should have killed him. Why did he steal the horse? He said, oh, well, he looked like a sannyasi. What can I do with him? Apparently, this is the first time that Indra has shown this color, that if you change the clothes, you can do anything in this world. This is the first time this has happened. So if you want to do anybody, fool anyone, you can even do that by taking the sannyasi's clothes. You wear the sannyasi's clothes and people will accept you. Oh, he is a renounced order of life, and he is this, he is that, and so many things people will say. And you can take advantage of all that. So Indra was aware that this can be done, so he started changing these clothes. In the Bhagavatam, while referring to this, it is mentioned there that these kind of dresses, what Indra has taken, is known as Pavagantam. Pavagantam means that it is the kind of sinful activity what Indra was doing. And that Pavagantam in shortened later on, and it is known as Pakhandam, or in other words, it's also known as Pashandis. Pashandis are those people who have taken to these different kinds of dresses and accepts a lifestyle to suit their sense gratification. But they will do such things in such a way, in a very, very covered manner, that they will adopt such clothes and dresses that they can do things like this and continue with their lifestyle, what they want to do. So he came back, and because he brought the horse back, this time he tied the horse to what is known as the yupam. Yupam is the one, is the post to which you tie the horse in the sacrificial arena. When you tie that, they normally tie that with a golden chain. That is how it's tied to the yupam. Yupam, it is, the horse is tied with a golden chain. So he tied the horse there, and they decided to continue with the sacrifice. At a certain time, in the process of sacrifice, there is a responsibility of one person to bring the horse back into the sacrifice again. Now that the horse has come back, they thought that everything is fine, so they tie the horse and they start continuing the sacrifice. Hardly the sacrifice has begun, within a short time, the horse has gone missing again. This time, Indra has come in a different form. He has changed his form and he has come in a different form. He has come and he has stolen the horse again, and he has started going back to the heavenly planet. By now, again, Vijayashu understood the best thing is to go back to Atri Maharshi, the sage Atri, and ask him where to find Indra. Because he was more or less sure that Indra has done some trick again. So he went back to Atri. Sage Atri showed him Indra going away, this time with the horse again in the sky. He told Vijayashva, kill him and get the horse back from him. Vijayashva went up to him and was about to fire the shot. By then, Indra has changed his dress again. And he said to him, before he wanted to fight, Indra said, here is the horse, take it back. I don't need the horse. Oh, you come for the horse, have you? Now here is the horse. Again, he was playing this dirty game with Vijidashva. Vijidashva comes back, and Prithu Maharaj, the story reached, the case was reported to Prithu Maharaj. Prithu Maharaj came to know what has happened. He said, I'm not going to tolerate this anymore. If Indra wants to have has a problem, then I'm going to kill Indra. This is what he said. So Prithu Maharaj is the performer of the sacrifice. He is not allowed to kill anybody else except that he can participate in the sacrifice where the horse will be sacrificed. That is how much it is allowed for him to perform the sacrifice. But while engaged in the diksha, diksha means that he has taken the vow to perform the sacrifice. That means throughout that period, he is very tightly controlled and restricted in his life because of the type of sacrifice he is engaged in. That he is not allowed to act in a freely, like a free kshatriya, to go and kill Indra. So he was restricted. The brahmanas who were Ritvik, Hodav, Adhvaryu, Udghadav, the four Ritviks who helped him in the sacrifice, they told Prithu Maharaj, you should not take the weapon because it's against the rules. Rather, if you want Indra to be killed, we will bring him here through the power of the mantra. We have the ability to do that. We have no problem in doing that if that is what you want us to do. Prithu Maharaj nodded the head and he said, bring Indra here. We can't allow this to keep on doing this. And in the Bhagavadam, while referring to this, it is mentioned, Sthanan Indra Prajalidam, that Indra, who was sitting there in his throne, started shaking there. Because in the sacrifice in Brahmavartam, the brahmanas were chanting these mantras and Indra could not stay in the heavenly planet anymore. It was almost the stage has come, Indra started falling down into the sacrifice, into the fire, was going to be sacrificed there itself. So Indra started coming down, and when Indra was falling down, Lord Brahma thought that this has gone too far, that Prithu Maharaj is taking things beyond unnecessarily. After all, why is he performing these sacrifices? He's performing these sacrifices because he wants to bring the great happiness to his subjects or to the people, and that's why he's doing that. But is there necessity to kill Indra for that? This is what Brahma thought. So Lord Brahma came to Prithu Maharaj and started talking to him that he should stop these sacrifices. Here also there is something interesting in the Bhagavadam to notice. When two people are fighting each other, somebody is going to mediate, generally what will they do? They are supposed to tell both parties, isn't it, not to fight. That's what we find when America wants to interfere and some two countries are fighting. They tell both of them, you should not fight each other. Similarly, all the big powers, they all do that. And when there is some crisis in this world among the leaders or among the two countries or two nations, a powerful nation steps in and tells them, don't fight. And they will try to do their best to stop fighting. This is quite common. So similarly, here also, when Brahma came, Brahma decided to talk to Prithu Maharaj. Apparently he didn't talk to Indra. Because Brahma knew Indra's mind, what it is. There was no point in talking to him. Apparently he knew that it is better to talk to Prithu Maharaj because he has some sense at least to understand about these sacrifices. Prithu Maharaj was asked by Lord Brahma that what do you need? He said, I am not bothered 99 or 100. I am not going to stop 100. I am even thinking of going 150 or 200 even. That's my plan, he said. Prithu Maharaj said, I am not doing it for any benefit for me. I am just doing it because so that people should have the prosperous life and they should live comfortably and happily in this world. And because it's my duty as a king to protect them, and I am performing that sacrifices. Brahma said to Prithu Maharaj that please stop this, because this Indra has this problem that he cannot stand others becoming more powerful than him, or becoming more famous than him, or opulent than him. So if you continue doing this, one day Indra will find it very hard, and therefore I thought that it's better I talk to you about it. And Prithu Maharaj said, that is no problem, I'm not particularly bothered, 98 or 99 or 100 or 150, it doesn't matter to me. All it matters to me is that the people should have enough for their livelihood. They don't have to struggle hard in their life to maintain themselves. Everything should be provided by nature's arrangement. As long as it's done, I haven't got any problem. that because according to the Shastra, that demigods have a responsibility for our life in this world. And who is Indra? Indra is the head of these demigods. So if the demigods refrain from supply, if they give me the guarantee that all the necessities of life will be provided without them going to work from morning to night, then I am satisfied, I don't have a problem. So on that understanding, Pradyumna Maharaj stopped his sacrifices. So the 99th one, he stopped the sacrifices, and therefore Pradyumna Maharaj got a title. Indra has got a title as Shatakradu, and Pradyumna Maharaj got a title as Ekona Shatakradu, in other words, one who has done 99 sacrifices. So that is the story of Pradyumna Maharaj. Now, what happened then? That this Pradyumna Maharaj has some qualities in him. After all, he is Krishna himself has come to teach this world as a popular emperor. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you look carefully, if you take away the number of chapters which are related to Krishna, Supreme Personality, Godhead Krishna, many of the other chapters, there is no other episode described in such a length as Pradyumna Maharaj's episode. You will notice that so many chapters runs into glorifying Pradyumna Maharaj, his administration and his relationship with the people. So this Pradyumna Maharaj at that time thought himself that it's not important for me whether this whole sacrifice is corresponding or not. As long as the demigod supply the needs, I'm satisfied, and it was stopped. So while this was happening, Pradyumna Maharaj wanted to realize that it has pleased Krishna very much. This attitude of Pradyumna Maharaj has pleased him very much, because Krishna decided to come at that time and present himself in front of Pradyumna Maharaj in that sacrifice, what was cancelled. And he could read Pradyumna Maharaj's heart very much. In other words, his mind was such that he told Pradyumna Maharaj, please give up this enmity towards Indra, because it was becoming very inimical, relationship was building up. We can see normally in our own life, once an enmity has been built up between two groups of people or two individuals, it's very difficult, that black mark, to go away from the heart. It will stay. That is just the nature. And sometimes, it's very interesting also to read in the newspapers that some two countries fight a war for some time. And after the war, they both get tired. They finish exhausted with all the resources, or millions die and so much misery on both sides happens. And then after that, somebody comes in and brings some sort of compromise between the two nations or two communities. And in the compromise, they tell them, now you shake hands each other and tell them that you have forgotten all the ill will and all the bad feelings, and from now on you will remain as friends and work for the prosperity of the people and this, that and the other, all sorts of things. In the history, if you look, you will find this again and again and again happening. But can you see any instance where they have forgotten the enmity after they have shaken the hands? I have not seen, because every time I have read and listened to the papers, all the time I find there are so many examples, if one wants to look at it, in so many wars, the after the war, 20 days, sometimes few months, sometimes years, war is over, the prime ministers or presidents of the countries will meet together, they'll drink a lot of champagne and they will shake hands and they will say to each other, now on we are be friends and this, that and the other. No, never. It has never happened in the history, not once. That enmity that has sown into the mind, what we have seen, it goes through generations after generations. Even those leaders who fought each other, the war, even after they have disappeared from this planet, it's taken over by their successors. And that enmity continues again through generation after generation after generation. It goes on. This is the reality, and that never has changed. But here is an example in Pradyumna Maharaj, who in 1 minute he was told by Krishna, give up that enmity towards Indra, because Indra was getting too much, unbearable. And he told, Krishna said to Pradyumna Maharaj, give up that enmity towards Indra. Pradyumna Maharaj said, my dear Lord, I have given up my enmity towards Indra. And when Krishna looked into the heart of Pridhu Maharaj, he could not even see a slight trace of enmity. In the Bhagavatam says, a slight trace of enmity in the heart of Pridhu Maharaj. What is this show? What does this show? This shows the greatness of Dhruva Maharaj's descendants. That is how Bhagavatam says. Why? Dhruva Maharaj exhibited the same quality when he was fighting with Yaksha. That Yaksha fought so severely against, Swayambhuva Manu came there, instructed Dhruva Maharaj that this is not good for a devotee to keep this mentality in life. It's not a good mentality for anybody. What to talk about a devotee? A devotee cannot afford to keep an inimical feeling towards anyone in this world. What to speak about one's own enemy? There's no question about to any other living entity. A devotee has no enemy in this world. And that is precisely the reason in the Srimad Bhagavatam, while referring to Prahlad Maharaj, why Sri Narada Muni said, I never had a disciple like him in my whole history, he said. Narvairaya prashandaya sasudaya mahalpane prahladaya yadadruhi hanishebi varorjidam. That Narasimhamurti, Narasimhadev says Narasimhamurti says to the demigods, Narvairaya prashandaya, that the great quality of Prahlada was, he has no enemies in this world. Even his own father who tried to torture him and give him all the hell one could think of and destroy him. And to even to that father, Prahlada Maharaj prayed to Krishna to give him shelter. That is the greatness of that heart. The great heart what Prahlada had was that Narvairaya prashandaya sasudaya mahalpane prahladaya yadadruhi hanishebi varorjidam. Hiranyakashipu was creating so much pain for Prahlada, a devotee. And Prahlada was tortured, and the story of torture of Prahlada in the Bhagavatam, if you read, you cannot understand that how a father could do such a thing to one's own son. And that is how badly Prahlada was treated. And to that Prahlada, Krishna says, I will tolerate everything else. I will tolerate killing the cows, I will tolerate killing the brahmanas, I will tolerate destroying all the temples, I will tolerate. Stopping all the sacrifices, I will tolerate. Krishna says to the demigods, but Nirvairaya prashandaya sasudaya mahalpane prahladaya yadadruhi hanishepi varorjidam. The moment he lays his hands on Prahlada, I will act. This was Krishna's words to the demigods, and that's what he did. Narasimhamurti appeared and killed Hiranyakashipu at that point. He did not have a second discussion about it. Anyway, that is what the situation is. That Prahlada Maharaj's story is teaching us that freedom from enmity towards another living entity and to give up enmity towards another living entity, it is only possible for a devotee to do that. And that is the devotee's qualification. A devotee becomes glorified by Krishna. Krishna accepts him as a devotee when he gives up these inimical feelings towards another living entity. There is no need, because devotee's realization is that Krishna is present in every living entity. He is also part and parcel of Krishna. So this was missing, and Pridhu Maharaj, by his perfect example, showed that he is in a position to give up enmity towards Indra. And in the Bhagavatam, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is only two instances where devotees have acted in this way. One is Dhruva Maharaj under instruction from Swayambhuva Manu, and the other one, Pridhu Maharaj, under instructions from the Supreme Lord himself. He was able to give up this enmity towards Indra. And this is also telling us that this important thing, that once this enmity gets in heart, it is not very easy to get rid of it. Even if one wants to, it's not possible, because that is the nature of the mind, that you can't change it. It's just the way the mind is, that the enemies will be always in the front, whereas the friends will always be at the back. That's the way the human mind is structured. So anyway, after this sacrifices was over, Krishna decided to appear on the scene and instruct and give this knowledge to Pridhu Maharaj, because Pridhu Maharaj is Krishna's another incarnation, Kalavadaram as he is called. Indra is an Amshavadaram. They are all incarnations of Krishna. But when they come into this world, they have to act like as they belong to this world. And Pridhu Maharaj also acted in the same way. And Pridhu Maharaj, the Supreme Lord understood that Pridhu Maharaj is ready now for higher instruction. And that is what Prithu Maharaj wanted. He wanted to instruct the people of going back to the spiritual world as the next phase in their life. Material necessities were all provided, and immediately after the material needs were met, the next thing to do in the human society is to go to prepare themselves for the death and going back to the spiritual world. So that was the purpose, and it is for this reason that Krishna sent the four Kumaras to him. Sanal Kumara Maharshi came and instructed Prithu Maharaj in a long chapter of instructions Sanal Kumara Maharshi gave to Prithu Maharaj, which comes later on. So before that, I'll just read these few chapters which we have spoken about in the last class and today, and then we'll go back to the stories.
बाहुभ्याम मध्यमानाभ्याम इदनम भगवद्गीताम् तद् दृष्ट्वा इदम् जानुषयो ब्रह्मवादिनः ऊजो परमसन्तुष्टा विदित्वा भगवल्कराम् ऋषयौजुम् एष विष्णुर्मगवदकला भूयवाली इयं च लक्ष्म्या सम्भूरी पुरुषस्या नवायिनी अयं तु प्रथमो राज्ञा भूमान् प्रथयिता एष पितुर्नाम महाराजो भविष्यति पृथुश्रवाः इयं च सुधरी देवी गुणभूषणभूषण अर्चिर्नाम वराराहो पृथुमेवा वरन्धरी एष साक्षाधरेरंशो जादो लोकरिरीक्षया लोकरिरक्षया इयं कल्पना हि श्री अनुजी अनवायिनी श्रीमैत्रयोवाच
15 श्रीमैत्रयोवाच वशं सन्निस्मदं विप्रा गन्धव प्रवराजगोपुमजोसुमनोधारा सिद्धानत्यन्ति स्वस्त्रियाः शङ्खदूर्यमृदङ्गाद्यां मेदुर्दुन्दुभयो दिवि तत्र सर्वोपाचग्मुर्देवर्षि पितृणां गणाः ब्रह्माजगद्गुरुर्देवैः सहस्रत्य सुरेश्वरैः वैन्यस्य दक्षिणे हस्ते दृष्ट्वा चिन्नं गदाभृदाः पादयोररविन्दं च तं वै मेने हरे कलां यस्या प्रतिहतं चक्रम् अंशसपरमेष्ठिनां तस्याभिषेकमारब्धो ब्राह्मणे ब्रह्मवादिवि अभिषेकजनि अभिषेकजनिगान्यस्मै आजह्रुः सर्वतो जनाः सरिल्समुद्रागिरया नागा खावा गावखगा मृगा द्यौ क्षितिं सर्वभूतानि समाजहृर्वायनं स्वभिषिक्तो महाराज सुखवासा साध्वलङ्कृता पत्न्यार्चिषालङ्कृतया विरेजग्निरिवापरां तस्मै जहारदनदो हैमं वीरवरासनं वरुणसलिलस्रावम् आदवत्रं शशिप्रभं वायुश्च वालव्यजने धर्मकीर्तिमयीं स्रजम् इन्द्रकिरीरमुत्कृष्टं दण्डं संयमनं यम ब्रह्म ब्रह्ममयं वर्मभारतीहारमुत्तमं हरिः सुदर्शनं चक्रं तत्पत्निव्याहदां श्रियं दशचन्द्रमसिं रुद्रशतचन्द्रं ददाम्भिय सोम अमृतमयानश्वां स्तुष्टारुपाश्रयं रथम् अग्निराजगवं चावं सूर्यो रश्मिमयानिशन् भ्रुवादुगे भूपादुगे योगमयो द्यौ पुष्पावलिमन्वहं नाट्यं सुगीतं वादित्रम् अन्तर्धानं च खेचराः क्षयश्चाशिरसत्या समुद्रशङ्खमात्मजाः सिन्धवा पर्वता नद्यो रथवीधिर्महात्मन सुधोदमागतो वन्दीं तं स्तोदमुपदस्थिरे स्तावगांस्थानभिप्रैत्य पृथुरुवैन्या पदाभवान् मेघनृह्रादया वाजा प्रहसन्निदम ब्रवील् श्रीपृथुरुवाच भो सुदहे भागदसौम्यवन्दीं लोकेऽधुना स्पृष्टगुणस्य मे स्याल् किमाश्रयो मे स्तवमेष योज्यतां मामय्य भुवन्मिथदा गिरोवां तस्मात्परोक्षे स्मदुपश्रदान्यलं नरिष्यतस्तोत्रमवीच्यवाच सत्युत्तमश्लोकगुणानुवादे जुगुप्सितं न स्तवयन्ति सभ्याः महल्गुणानात्मनिकर्तुमीशं कस्तावगे स्तवयदे सदोऽपि ते स्याभविष्यन्निति विप्रलब्धो जनावहासं कुमतिर्नवेद प्रभवो हल्पनस्तोत्रं जुगुप्सन्ति विश्रुता श्रीमन्दपरमोदारं पौरुषं वा विगृहितं वयं तु विदिदालोके सुदाद्याभिवरीमभि कर्मभि कर्मात्मानं यापयिष्याम बालवल् श्रीमद्भागवते महापुराणे चतुर्थस्कन्धे पृथुचरिते पञ्चदशोऽध्यायां श्रीमैत्रयोवाचाम् इति ब्रुवाणं द्रुपदीं गायकां मुनिचोदित तुष्टुभस्तुष्टमनसा द्वागमृतसेवयां नालं वयं ते महिमानुवर्णिनि यो देववर्यो अवतारमाय वेनाङ्गजातस्य पौरुषाणि ते वाचस्पतीनामभिबभ्रमोर्ध्याः अदाप्युदारश्रवसप्रदोर्हरे कलावतारस्य कथामृता कृताः यथोपदेशं मुनिभिः प्रचोदित श्लाघ्यानि कर्माणि वयं विदन्महि एष धर्मवृतं श्रेष्ठो लोकं धर्मेऽनुवर्तयन् गोप्ता च धर्मसेतूनां शास्त्रा तत्परिबन्धिनाम् एष वै लोकबालानां भिमर्त्येकस्थनौ तनु काले काले यथा भागं लोकयोरुभयोर्हितं वसुकालमुपादत्ते काले चायं विमुञ्चति समसर्वेषु भूतेषु प्रवन् सूर्यवद्विभुं दिदिक्षत्यक्रमं वैन्य उपर्याक्रमतामवि भूतानां करणशश्वतार्थानां क्षितिवृत्तिमान् देवे वर्षत्यसौ देवौ नरदेववपुरुहरि कृच्छ्रप्राणा प्रजा ह्येष रेक्षिष्यत्यञ्जसैन्द्रवल् आप्यायत्यसौ लोक वदनामृतमूर्तिनां सानुराग अवलोकेनांशदस्मितचारुणा अव्यक्तवर्मेश निगूढकार्यो गम्भीरवेदामुपगुप्तवित्त अनन्दमहात्म्यगुणैकधामां प्रजेदामिव संप्रदात्मा ప్రాంజని ప్రాహమహి సంజాదవే పదో ధరోవాజ నమఃపరస్మై పురుషాయ మాయయ విన్యస్తనాదనవే గుణాల్మనే నమస్వరూపానుభవేన నిర్ద్వద ద్రవ్యక్రియాకారక విభ్రమోర్మయే ఏనహమాత్మాయదనం వినిర్మిత దాత్రాయ దోయం గుణసర్గసంగ్రహ స ఏవ మాం హందుముధాయిద స్వర ఉపస్థితోన్యం శరణం కమాశ్రయే ఏదదావసృజ చరాచరం సమాయ ఆత్మాశ్రయా విదర్కేయ తయవ స్వయం కిల గుప్తముద్యతాం కహం నుమాం ధర్మపరోచికాం సతి నూనంపదేశస్య సమీహితం జనై తన్మాయ యాదృజయా కృతాత్మభి న లక్ష్యతేస్తు కరోదగారేయం ద్యోనేకమేవ ప్రదశ్చమీశ్వర సర్గాదియోస్య అనురణర్దిశక్తిభిర్ ద్రవ్యక్రియాకారకచేతనాత్మభి తస్మై సమున్నద్ధ నిరుద్ధశక్తయే నమః పరస్మై పురుషాయ వేధసే సవై భవానాత్మవినిర్మితం జగల్ భూతేంద్రియాంతఃకరణాత్మకం విభో సంస్థాపయిష్యన్న యమాం రసాదనం ద్యుజ్జహారాం వసమాధిసూకరాం అమాముపస్థే మైనావ్యవస్థిత ప్రజా భవానధ్య నిరక్షు కిల స వీరమూర్తి సమభూద్ధరాధరో ఇవ మాం పయస్యుగ్రశరో జిఘాంససీ నూనం జనైరీహితమీశ్వరాణం అస్మద్యుదే స్థల్గుణసర్గమాయేదే మోహితజిత్తవర్పమీస్తేభ్యో నమో వీరశస్కరేభ్య శ్రీ శ్రీమద్భాగవతి మహాప్రాణేశ్వరస్కందే ధరిత్రీ నిగ్రహో నామ సప్తదశోధ్యాయం. సో దట్ ఈస్ వేర్ పృథు మహారాజ్ పార్ట్ ఆఫ్ ద స్టోరీ ఈస్ ఫినిష్డ్ అండ్ వీ హ్యావ్ టు టాక్ ఫ్యూ మోర్ థింగ్స్ అబౌట్ పృథు మహారాజ్ విచ్ ఐ విల్ డూ ఇన్ ది నెక్స్ట్ సండే. అండ్ దిస్ పృథు మహారాజ్ డిస్కషన్స్ ఆన్ అదర్ వర్డ్స్ పృథు మహారాజ్ ఇన్స్ట్రక్షన్స్ హీ రిసీవ్డ్ ఫ్రమ్ Sanat Kumara Maharshi in the Bhagavadam brings another important point also there. That is, you will notice one thing, that Prudhu Maharaj performed so many sacrifices. Generally, these Vedic sacrifices has got one problem. The problem is this, that any karma, not only Vedic sacrifices, any karma in this world has got two things. One, it develops the mentality that I am the doer. That I have done this, I am the one behind it. Karma's nature is like that. Nobody can escape from that. That is the way the material world is created. Even big men in this world, when something success happens, they will definitely take the credit to that. They will always say that I have done this, I have done that. It's me. That aham, that ahankaram which comes from that, is always accompanies with every karma we do in this world. There is no one who can claim, at least in a subtle way, they will put that in this world. That is the nature of karma. And Vedic sacrifices are not an exception to that. It also will create this feeling. That is why when we say Karmakanda section of the Vedas, why we criticize that? For this reason, that karma develops this the false conception that I am the performer. I have done it. And me. That gets stronger in the mind, which is not favorable for on the spiritual side. The second problem with karma is, it also brings, every karma is followed by desire for result. Nobody does anything in this world free of cost. People may say, I'm doing it as, I'll give this to you free. But that free, what he's talking about, is something, strings are always attached to it, that there is some benefit he's deriving by giving it free something to somebody. So just like sometimes businessmen, they give gratis. They say, oh, this is, if you buy this, you get this free. But only if you buy this, you get this free. Otherwise, you won't get it free. So this desire for result, for everything, all our actions in this world, is one problem. And these are the two things which causes a material body again. That this desire for result and I am the doer. These two things, ahankaram and bhalecha, or results or desire for the result. So as long as these two things are there, any karma what we perform in this world is bound to create more material bodies. Another cycle of further material bodies has to be accepted, because you have performed a karma, you have to get the result. So to enjoy the result, you have to come back again in another body and accept that result, either good or bad, whatever that is, whichever type of karma one has done. So the same thing applies to Vedic sacrifices also. And normally, most of the emperors and kings, they have fallen or victimized by this thing, that they did not be able to escape from this problems of sacrificing. And you will see later on in the same canto, fourth canto, you will see the history of another great personality known as Prachina Barhis. Prachina Barhis was known for this. Only happiness in his life was sacrifice and sacrifice and sacrifice, one after the other, performing sacrifices, and he with full desires he performed them. And then Narada Muni comes and instructs, that comes later. But why I'm saying this was, this Pridhu Maharaj, look at his attitude, Pridhu Maharaj's nature, that he was performing the sacrifices, but he had no attachment to it. At not once Pridhu Maharaj any time claimed that he wanted any result from these sacrifices. His point was, personally I didn't expect anything. I will perform this as a duty, because performing Vedic sacrifices, demigods were placed and they will provide the necessities of life for the population of the people who lived. And that's where he stopped there. He didn't take it further from there. In the therefore, there is two things. The karma, what one performs, it has two aspects. One is that this Vedic sacrifices has to be meant to be performed without desiring for herself. It is very explicitly mentioned that also. And that one is not allowed to get results from the Vedic sacrifices. It's meant for purification. Because if you perform the sacrifices without desiring result from that, in course of time, those activities purify that person's consciousness and eventually he becomes qualified to go into the Jnana Margam or to the Bhakti Margam. He gets an opportunity. That's what happens. Those people who perform sacrifices are those who are very, very attached to the result. That is what brings them to these sacrifices in the first instance. But if you perform the Vedai Sarvani Karmani Abhalabharadaya Varnidani Idi Budvatani Toyarpidani Tavahi Samanajaran Yani Naishkarmyam Ishem. That it has to be done with full Naishkarmyam. Naishkarmyam means without any attachment to that. Vedai Sarvani Karmani. There is so many sacrifices mentioned in the Vedic literature, in such a vast literature. All the four Vedas refer to sacrifices, and it is sacrifices everywhere. Krishna also says there in that the Vedas are with the flowering language, they describe all the great sacrifices and the results which you will get from those sacrifices. That's there in the Veda. Vedai Sarvani Karmani. But how should they do? Abhalavaradaya Varnidani. It should be done without desiring results. That is injunction. It's like that. Iti buddhvatani tvai arpidani savahiyam samanujaranyani naishkarmyam ishem. Ma buddhvair durvijiddhen kukhajita virudhan karma vajam pravarte. That even if one is able to offer all his activities to the Supreme Lord, he will not get bound in this material world. That is the nature, that any karma what we perform in this material world, if it is done as an offering to me, Krishna says, you will not be bound by that. Otherwise, you will be bound. There is nobody can escape from that. That is, Krishna's rules are like that. That in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is very, very clearly he speaks about this. That in the Karma Yoga section also, and in the other places also, Krishna has mentioned, that if you perform phalam tektva manishinam, that if you, with the desire for yourself, if you perform the actions, then you have to pay a heavy price for it. Means followed by different material bodies later on. One has to come back to this world and accept the results of his own actions. So therefore, Pridhu Maharaj's example we find, Durvarjam cheda vaptam khalu vipadaye tulprayel chilprakashem. That everything what has been offered or performed sacrifices with detached mind, if the results are coming, if it is offered to Krishna, then that that sacrifices or activity will not bind anybody to this material world and he gets purified in course of time. So in the Bhagavatam, in this particular topic comes again and again for discussion. Krishna is very fond of explaining that matter very strongly to all the devotees. And in all the commentaries on the Bhagavatam as well as in the other Vedic literature like Brahma Sutram and all, there is specific reference to this Karmaganam. Karmaganam is not something which you can, I'm not doing any more Karmaganam, I'm a bhakti devotee, I'm free from all karmic reactions, I'm so pure now, I'm completely freed from... No, nobody is free. We all have our own accounts to settle. And that accounts is stored also very carefully in the bank. So here the situation, Krishna is saying that various processes you can escape from the results of your karmic reactions. And that is why in the Ekadasha Skandham, while talking about, Krishna talks about another karma yoga which comes there, how karma yoga should be performed. Yes, svanya karma yogam tava bhajana samayam itra javishta murtim khadyam bhakti garubam krishati khritimal. Then, yes, svanya karma yoga, there is another karma yoga which is different than this karma yoga in the Vedic sacrifices. What is that karma yoga? Tava bhajana samaye yatra javishta murtim khadyam sattvai garubam khadimushadiva kvabiva bhavayitvam. That he engages in the deity worship. That deity worship is the another karma yoga, which is also referred in the Bhagavatam as Kriya Yoga. Various names are given at different places, but in essence, it is the same thing. That if you perform deity worship, or Pushpai Gandhair Nivedir, Kovija Virajido, Shaktido, Bhakti Bodhir, Nityam Varyam, Sabaryam, Vidada Daivipo, Tulprasadam, Bhajayam. That if you perform deity worship, and offer everything to Krishna all the time. Anything has to be offered to Krishna. That is the principle behind it. And that karma yoga in the Bhagavatam is much more easier to perform compared to the Vedic sacrifices. Vedic sacrifices is cost so much money, first of all. Requires qualified people to perform. Requires the ability and the capacity of the person who is performing. All these things matters there. But this karma yoga is much more easier. And that is what Krishna says there. It's called as Kriya Yoga. In the Ekadasha Skandham, it's referred as Kriya Yoga. There it says to Uddhava, that perform this, that everything what you have to offer, offer it to me first. That, and then the reaction won't touch him. There will be no reaction from that to that person. In fact, in many, many very families who have worshipped Krishna seriously for generations, it is still a practice that anything in their life, in their what has happened, they always made it as an offering to Krishna. It has always been the tradition among the many great families. They have done like that. And that is why deity worship becomes necessary. At home also, it becomes necessary. Unless one is fully involved in the temple worship, one should have the opportunity to worship deity at home. Because deity worship is necessary because in a householder life, all these things are always happening. A householder regularly does shopping, regularly buying things. And unlike a brahmachari or a sannyasi, a householder life is very much involved in this world. And sometimes he finds something nice in the market, he wants to have it. If he has got the money, he'll get it also. And this is the way a householder's life is. But Krishna is saying that whatever you like it, you found in the market or anywhere, something what you have liked, offer that to me first. Before you start using it or taking it. Krishna doesn't want any of these things. This is the interesting side of it. That if one develops this habit little by little in life, that everything what we do becomes in relationship with Krishna. And it may look surprising. It's not that we only offer food to Krishna. You can offer everything to Krishna. Krishna accepts that. Because it develops a mentality in the person that it is with Krishna's mercy and Krishna has allowed me to use it in this particular instance that I am able to have it. And that is the necessity attitude. Otherwise, if you simply buy things from the market, simply for my own sense gratification, I can use it for my own gratification, keeping Krishna out of the equation, then it will bind a person. This is what Bhagavatam says. There is a lot of discussion about it. In the Bhagavatam, when we come to Ekadasha Skandham, we'll discuss that also about this binding process or how we get into bondage in this world. But if you tie your activities down to Krishna, the result from your activities is offered to Krishna. Yes, svanya karma yoga tava bhajana samaye yatra javishta murtim khadyam sattvai garubam nushadi khridimadi kvapiva bhavayitva. That bhavam, the attitude of a person, Krishna says, I don't want anything from you, but I will look into your heart and see what your attitude is. This is what Krishna is looking at. Krishna doesn't want any of these things. What can we offer to the Supreme Lord? What can we offer to the Supreme Lord? After all, millions and billions of universes, he is the proprietor. He is within his stomach, he showed it to Yashoda Devi. It is better not to look inside and outside, wandering around where I am. He said this to Yashoda Devi. So that pastime in the Bhagavatam is a clear indication that nothing can actually, we can offer to Krishna. What can we offer to Krishna? But Krishna says that when you make an offer, when you offer something to me and see me in the center, then I see that you have an attachment for me. That is why you have offered it to me. Because there is a verse in the Bhagavatam. It says like this. Yadyadishtadavam loge yachadi prayamalmana Tatanivedayan Mahyam Tadanandhyaya Kalpade. In this other verse of the Bhagavatam, Yadyadishtadamam Logam, that normally in the olden days, the system was that the people, they had this habit. It is not a new thing started yesterday or a day before. For thousands of years, people had this habit that most of them lived on agriculture, in the farms. That was their main occupation. So the farmers generally, when they have produced food, they will immediately take a large quantity of that into the temple to offer it to Krishna. And that is how all the different kinds of offerings have started in the life. Even today you find people bringing rice, dal, chapati, sabji, everything to Krishna. Why? They do not know what they are doing. Most of the people are not aware why they are doing it. But through generations, this verse in the Bhagavatam stuck into the heart of the people. They took it seriously because those people knew what they were doing. Today most of the people are unaware why they are doing it. But they are doing it because their parents told them or grandparents told them to do it. So they are still bringing rice and sabjis and everything to Krishna, ghee, everything. But it comes from this. Actually, this verse in the Bhagavatam. Yadyadishtadamam logi yachadi priyamalpana tattannivedayan mahyam tadanandaya galpadeyam. Then Krishna said to Uddhava that don't worry about it, what you are offering to me. Whatever you like, you offer it to me. Something you like, you take it and offer it to me first before you start taking it. And this concept grew through the through generations, and it came up in that way in this world. And today, we find even today, after thousands and thousands of years, people still have this habit. In some many, many temples, big temples, if you look, you will see that the farmers, they bring coconut, rice, vegetables, and so much they bring, because when the Mother Earth is producing all these things profusely in their land, when the farmer look at it, his thoughts are going back. He's thinking that Krishna has given me this. My first responsibility is to offer it to Krishna. It is His mercy that's come to me here. And with that realization, he takes these things to offer it to Krishna. And the temple gets the opportunity to offer them to the devotees also as prasadam later. So that is the concept behind it. And that is Karma Yoga. That is what Krishna calls as Karma Yoga in the Ekadasha Skandham. Because here there is an understanding of the person who does it, that this is Krishna's. Krishna has given it to me. I will offer it back to Krishna. Otherwise, I have no right to touch it. Because if I am taking it for my own sense satisfaction, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna says that, Aham vaisho anarobhutvam praninam dehamashridam, that inside the food, who is digesting? I am digesting, Krishna says. It is me who is digesting your food. Krishna is responsible. So a person who is spiritually aware of all these things, he will be conscious of this in his daily life. There is no need that one has to go to Himalayas and sit in the caves and meditate there for hundreds of years to find out the Supreme Lord. Supreme Lord is very much inside. He is there in the heart. He is in the belly. He is everywhere. And only thing is, what is lacking is this awareness in us. And Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is repeatedly pointing out this fact to us, that Karma Yoga begins when you start offering everything to Krishna. That is the beginning of Karma Yoga. So that is in the olden days, even today, in many, many families, generally there will be a temple at home. Even in the limited facilities what they have at home, they will still make sure that they have a small temple room. The deity should be there. And everything, food that is cooked at home, should be offered to the deity. It's an acknowledgement that he has accepted that Krishna's mercy is what I am enjoying in this world. That is required. And one who does not have that attitude in life, Krishna says, Eva chandi alpakaranal, then he is simply eating verily the sin. That is how Prabhupada is translated in the Bhagavad Gita. That he is simply eating the sin of not acknowledging that who is providing us all these things. And so that is just the interesting side. So while talking about Pradhu Maharaj, what I was trying to say was that Pradhu Maharaj in 1 second said, I have nothing to do with this karmagandam, all these sacrifices. He was able to free himself from the karmaganda side and was able to move on to the devotee. Because when Sanat Kumara Maharshi came to see Pradhu Maharaj, Pradhu Maharaj's first question was, what shall we offer you? He asked Pradhu Maharaj, was asked by the Supreme Lord. And he said to the Krishna, that only thing I will ask you is one thing. Give me 10,000 years to hear about your glories. This was the question. Normally a karmagandi will never ask such a thing. If he was attached to the karmagandam or performing Vedic sacrifices, which shows here that Pudu Maharaj had no attachment to Kamadandam. He was completely free from that attachment, and he was able to make himself that he was more interested in hearing about the Supreme Personality of Godhead or Krishna's pastimes. That is what he was more interested. And it also shows that how purified he was inside, that he was able to put this question to Sanal Kumara Maharshi. And in return to that, in reply to that, Sanal Kumara Maharshi answers for the many, many verses after that, glorifying the Supreme Lord's position. And Sanal Kumara Maharshi's instructions helped Prithu Maharaj to eventually take to the Vanaprastha Ashram. And that is where that Sanal Prithu Maharaj leaves home. Now, when he left home, it won't take a few minutes, when he left home, Prithu Maharaj wanted to perform austerities. If you read Prithu Maharaj austerities and penances in the Bhagavatam, you will be amazed that a king who had lived such a comfortable life in the palace could do such a thing. It says there, first he was eating for months together roots, fruits and flowers in the forest. For many months he ate that and he performed penances. After that he stopped eating them. Then he started eating only dry leaves which has fallen from the tree. After some time he even stopped that. Then he started only drinking water and performing penances. After some time he even gave up the water. He was only taking some air inside. Vayu bhakshakaha, it says, simply vayu was going inside. That was the only food he had. And after some time even that was stopped. Even taking this air inside, he stopped that. By controlling his, the strength of the person is showing that. And in the Bhagavatam, while referring to this, Prithu Maharaj performing these penances, it also mentions there that he started his penances to still further than that. He took it from there. What is known as Panchagni Vidya. Panchagni Vidya means he was sitting in his cross-legged position in the forest. All around, on all five sides, there is heat coming onto his body. That means right side, left side, front side and back side, he has set fire. The fire was burning. And from the top, the sun was burning. So, on the five sides, when the heat was penetrating into his body, he was performing his austerities. Then, in addition to that, what else did he do? In the cold weather, extremely freezing weather, he will stand in the cold water right up to his neck and he was performing his penances. This is Prithu Maharaj's life. Prithu Maharaj Vanaprastha Ashram. Is there anybody who can do this Vanaprastha Ashram today? I don't know whether this is easy to read and discuss it, but when it comes to doing it, it shows that how difficult all these things are. That was the power of those great kings who were able to perform such austerities and penances. Dhruva Maharaj also did similar things, and that is the same tradition coming through Prithu Maharaj, what we find. Prithu Maharaj went to the forest, along with him, his wife also, Archis, she is Mahalakshmi, went with him. And after when Prithu Maharaj gave up his body in this way, when she found that, she put his body into the fire, and into that fire she also entered and gone back with him to the spiritual world. That is briefly the story of Prithu Maharaj. I'll stop there. And if there's any questions, please.
Last week we discussed that God say, "I am God." Buddha.
Yeah.
I want to know how Lord compared the bhakti of Buddha and the gopis.
Yes. In the Bhagavatam, Uddhava was asked to go and see the gopis. There is a particular chapter where Uddhava had to go to Vrindavanam to see the gopis' devotion. From there you could see that Krishna rated the gopis' devotion as the supreme devotion, topmost devotion. And to understand that devotion, Krishna thought that, and to appreciate or to acknowledge that, the only person who was capable of doing that was Uddhava, and that was the reason why he was asked to go and see the gopis in Vrindavanam. And there's a couple of chapters in the 10th canto referring to Uddhava's visit to Vrindavanam and his meeting with the gopis, and later on Uddhava's realizations after the meeting. All these things are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam in detail in a few chapters. And Gopi's response to Uddhava about the their relationship with Krishna. Uddhava came to understand that these gopis were not ordinary personalities. They had such a high degree of Krishna consciousness in them that Uddhava said that if ever after first he paid his obeisances to all the gopis, then he paid his obeisances to Srimati Radharani. And at the end, Uddhava said, I am not even qualified to pay obeisances to them. I will pay my obeisances to one of the grass which has grown in Vrindavanam, which has been touched by the gopis' feet. And that is why in the in the Bhagavadam, there is this famous verse, Vande Nanda Vrajastrinam Padareenum Abhishnasha. I will pay my obeisances, not to the gopis now, even to one of the dust that has fallen from the gopis' feet. Let me pay my obeisances to them. And saying that, Uddhava has spoken this very, very famous verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Vande Nanda Vrajastrinam Padareenum Abhishnasha Yasam Harigadodgidam Punadi Bhuvanatrayam. That what kind of people were these gopis? They were such people. Vande Nanda Vrajastrinam, these women of the Vraja, or the gopis of Vrindavanam. Padareenum Abhishnasham. Let me pay my respects to one of the dust which has fallen from the gopis' feet. Yasam Harigadodgidam Punadi Bhuvanatrayam. Why? These gopis have sung about Krishna, Krishna's pastimes, Harigatha. They were singing for so many years and non-stop they sung these verses. And by singing that Punadi Bhuvanatrayam, it purifies the whole world. That is what they have done. Just like normally in the Vedic system, Brahmanas are supposed to perform so many, they are supposed to perform so many penances, austerities. And the purpose of that is not for them alone. They don't do it for themselves. The idea is that it purifies the world. So purification of the world, that is a higher understanding of life. And that is normally in the Brahminical culture it exists. But here you find Uddhava saying here, Yasam Harigadod Gidam Punadi Bhuvanatrayam. That these songs, what the gopis were singing about Krishna, that will glorify, that will purify this whole world. So from there you can see that Uddhava always thought of the gopis as his instructing teachers in the process of devotion. That is how Srimad Bhagavatam takes. Everything, yes. In the there is one great scholar on Bhagavatam has explained this much more in depth. He says that, of course, he was talking about the time when the salary was paid in the form of a check. Today it's credited to your bank account, so you don't see the money, cash in the hand, isn't it? But there was a time when salaries were given either cash or check. So he said, he was explaining this in a nice temple, in a big scale he was talking about it. He said that at the end of the month, when you get your salary for your work, what you have done, he said, you take it to Krishna and put it in front of Krishna and say to Krishna like this, this is the result of my wasting my 1 month's life in this world. This is what I have got. This is, in fact, reality is like that, because in the name of living in this world, we have created so many engagements and busy with hammering from morning to night. Every one of us, nobody is exception to that. And some people say they are not affected by it, but I am affected. I know many others are affected. So generally, you should say to Krishna like this, this is my wasted time, 1 month. This is the result of that. Please accept this and take care of me. This is all you can pray to Krishna. It's in the verse form. I forget the verses in the Bhagavatam. In the all this Krishna tells us how to do these things, and to such a degree that everything, when one tries to obtain anything in this world, it should be offered to Krishna, because it is just a question of not only food, prasadam. Of course, we have to offer, because it begins from there, everything. But even other things, material, opulent life in this world, if you don't acknowledge it is Krishna's, then, that it is sinful. It is considered to be sinful from the Bhagavatam point of view. One should not do that. So one should acknowledge that it is Krishna's. It's Krishna's property. You have somehow it has come to your hand, and either due to some pious activity or good karma or whatever that has come to you. But still behind that there is Krishna behind it. And if you do that way, that it is not binding. A person's life will not bound. You will not get too attached to it and bondage. Once you have that consciousness in you all the time, that many of the families do like that. There are many people who do like that in life. That they have trained their children like that to do it in the same way. And if you do that at home, if you make it a practice in the course of time, it will influence others also to think in that way all the time. That one should not always think, oh, it's me who have done everything, everything has come to me because I have done this, I have done that. And the usual mind of the karmic. And Krishna says to escape out of that karmic mind, karmic consciousness, offer that to me. That's what Krishna. So everything can be offered to Krishna. Of course, without understanding these things, people offer so many things to Krishna. That has also become, in course of time, a nature like that. But you will notice one thing. If you go to the many, many big temples, there are so many lists of so many different offerings mentioned there. How did this all come into this system exist? It has come from this understanding that offering to Krishna everything is our duty. It's not only a responsibility, it's our duty also. That if you do offer, take anything from Krishna, everything has to be accounted for. Many people have this concept. Krishna has created this world for me to enjoy. Let me go and get everything what I can from here by borrowing, stealing or begging, whatever possible way. Exploit the world to the extent maximum possible. It's all for me, it's all for me. And this concept also there. So to escape from that consciousness and to understand and acknowledge that it's not mine, it is Krishna's. Because in the Vishnu Sahasranam, thousand names of Vishnu, it is mentioned there very clearly that this Bhumi Devi, whose property is that? Bhumi Devi is not our property. Bhumi Devi is Krishna's property. It says that Shri Dhara Shlishta Parshvam, that on the one side Bhumi Devi and on the other side is Lakshmi Devi. That is how Krishna stays in holding both of them on both sides. They are mine with this concept. So we can't take that proprietorship ourselves. In the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada has commented on this, that this proprietorship, I am the proprietor of this thing, that's a very wrong concept. It doesn't easily go away from our mind. It's always very strongly embedded there. And as long as we have this concept, I am the owner, I am the proprietor, it's very dangerous. It has to bring more material bodies again. Karmic reaction will pursue that, continue that. And therefore, to get out of this, Krishna gives this karma yoga in this way, to turn one's karma towards Krishna. And Krishna has two aspects. Krishna's one form is the impersonal side, the Parabrahmam, Brahmam side. And the other one side is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna himself. So, while offering in the temple, there are certain restrictions. For example, you can't bring anything and everything and offer it to Krishna. There is a certain procedure which you follow according to the Tantrika Vidhi. That such and such a thing you are allowed to offer to Krishna in the temple. Why? Because the temple worship has to be always on a much higher platform than worship at home. And at home, even if your worship may not be up to the standard what one is making, because temple standard has to be always higher. Because the whole society looks towards to the temple for the guidance and help. The temple has to offer that. So therefore, there are restrictions at the temple that you don't offer everything to Krishna. There are certain restrictions by which you offer to Krishna. There is a prescribed method and process how you offer, and certain regulations attached to it. But while offering at home, these restrictions don't come in. They are not applicable. Because there one has the opportunity, you can offer everything to Krishna. Whatever you possess in this, that's why Krishna says there, yadyad ishtadamam logi, whatever you like, ishta means what I like. Yadyad ishtadamam logi, whatever you like in this world, you like in this world. That's what Krishna says. If you like something, say you found a nice car, you wanted to buy it, you got the money to buy it, you bought it, offer it to Krishna. Yadyad ishtadamam logi, yachadi priyamalmana. You find something nice in the market. Sometimes a father goes to the shopping, and because householder life, all this is a part of that. Brahmacharis and sannyasis, they have no worries. Everything is provided for them. But for householder, he has to hunt for all these things. He goes for shopping. When he goes shopping, he finds something nice in the nice at home, nice in the shops, some fruits or sweets or something, and he wants to have it. or probably he thought about his family or children, he wants to give them those seeds. Krishna says, Yachadi Priyamalmanam, if you find something very dear to you, Tatannivedayan Mahyam, that bring it and offer it to me first, before you give it to the children. Sada Anandyaya Galpade, it will bring eternal happiness for you, Krishna is saying to us. So that is the way Krishna is teaching the Bhakti Yoga process, how to direct our karma in a way that it purifies our own lifestyle. So householder life, it becomes essential, all these things. If we do all that, it will have its benefits also. One can reap from that. Peter.
So there's two sides really. There's the householder doing his offerings, whatever it might be, his pots and pans before he uses them and that
yes,
sort of stuff.
Yes. If you follow that, the problem, the good thing is that naturally if Krishna is involved as a part in your life, the tendency or propensity for sinful life goes away, sinful activities, because normally any sensible person will think twice before you offer to Krishna something. Is this something which is acceptable to Krishna? So that makes it, purifies one's own life in this world in many ways, yes. Yeah.
And the other side is, having come into the temple life, taking up brahmacharya, there's where we offer our actions.
Yes.
You know,
yes. Brahmacharis and sannyasis, yes, they have no karma to the degree like a householder has. Generally, brahmacharis and sannyasis are free from the karmic reactions, because householder life has got this one problem that it brings in. Even if he performs everything, Shastra says like this, even if he performs everything perfectly as per the Shastra, still there is one thing called Panchamahapapam, five different kinds of sins, what a householder is likely to perform, commit in his life. So householder has by nature, he has a lot of sinful activities in his life, which is sinful. Sinful in the sense that he is not aware that they are sinful reactions, but he performs them. But brahmacharis and sannyasis case, that doesn't apply. Therefore, generally, if one has lived as a proper brahmachari life, one has a proper sannyasi life, if he has lived like that, after, there is no question of him coming back to this planet again to accept another body. He's definitely, the future is in the higher planets. He definitely goes higher and higher from there. And therefore, in Tavolokam, generally, Janalokam, Tavolokam and Satyalokam, the top three planetary systems, the Tavolokam is the habitat of the brahmacharis and sannyasis. They get there if they have acted as proper brahmacharis and sannyasis in their life. This is Varnashrama Dharma, the conclusions, the injunctions are like that. But sannyasis is not included in there. The grihastha is not included. Grihastha is excluded from that. He doesn't go back. Unless he purifies himself by his life in this world, by these processes, what mentions in the Bhagavatam.
But there is a trap there for, obviously, the sannyasis and the brahmacharis, is where,
yes,
where it must be our way of thought,
yes,
the way of our actions.
Yes, sure.
Because, you know, noticeably, in training, or finding out what it's all about, you become sometimes attached to your activities.
Yeah.
You think this is going to happen,
yes,
or
yes,
they should.
No, the ideal brahmachari and ideal sannyasi, what you mentioned in the Bhagavatam, is very hard to find today. Doesn't exist. It is hard to come to that standard, what Krishna says. Krishna gives the standard of a sannyasi, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha and everything. But that standard is a bit too high for today's world. It's hard to reach that standard, what's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. And so therefore, we say that for this reason only, I think at one point it said that sannyasi is not recommended in the age of Kali. And so many things are forbidden because you will never make it, that level of sannyasi, what is mentioned in the Bhagavatam. There are so many sannyasis in this world, but you know, the standard what Krishna has set is very, very high. And this is also another interesting point now that you mentioned about it. You see, Vedic culture is being spread all around the world by devotees and preachers and who are preaching by different people. So on the one hand, although the Vedic culture is being translated or taken to other places where it wasn't existing for a long, long time. And when people go back to India and talk about Vedic culture, some of them raise this good question. It's a very interesting question. He said that it's nice that people are taking to Vedic culture, but at the same time, when it comes back here again, will it come back in the same way as it has gone from here? This is an interesting question, because what normally happens is when you take one culture from one place to another you plant it in another place, and when it goes back into its original place, will that go back in the same way as it has come from there? It doesn't. It doesn't. Because normally we all have this tendency to impose our standards, our conditioning into that culture, and things can change always. And that you can very, very clearly see when you analyze our own life in this world here, how much we are away from Vedic culture. We say we are all Vedic, Vedic, we are all repeating Vedic, Vedic. But in reality, when it comes to the Vedic culture, what explains, Bhagavatam explains, or Bhagavad Gita says, that is not possible. It is not possible to get that standard, what is mentioned in the books. It will not happen, because we have, human nature is always trying to adjust things. If something is not going the way we want it, we will adjust it to suit our own life. We will find some reason or some argument to support our point of view. And therefore, it is always a matter of to maintain that purity in this life, in our way of life. It is very, very hard, and that's why it's necessary that although we cannot practice all these things, what Bhagavatam says, at least we should know what is the right thing. Because if you don't know what is the right thing, we will simply concoct mentally, and we will all say, oh, this is Vedic, that's Vedic, everything what we do is Vedic, but nothing is Vedic, because Bhagavatam says something different. And that is why it's necessary to understand what Bhagavatam says. It's absolutely certain, it's not possible to come to the standard what Krishna has explained in the Bhagavatam. The level of realizations required for a sannyasi, the level of realizations required for a brahmachari, same place for a sannyasi, vanaprastha and grihastha. All these things are there. The activities that a sannyasi is allowed to do, brahmachari is allowed to do, grihastha is allowed to do, vanaprastha is allowed to do, are there. The duties of a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, they are all mentioned there. Now, we are far away from all these things. In nowhere we are anywhere near to that. And still we are claiming ourselves to be, we are following the Vedic culture. So this brings a complete different situation in our own life. What we have to be conscious of, that we are trying to follow some of the good things what Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad, to some degree what we are capable of doing. But at the same time, to come to that level of the acceptance of Bhagavatam in our own life is practically impossible today in this world. Practically impossible. It is, the reality is like that. So when we dress as a brahmachari, when we dress as a grihastha, or when we dress as a sannyasi holding the danda, we always have to be always conscious of this fact, that the what Krishna has instructed in the Bhagavatam, as well as all this varnashrama dharma and our qualifications are concerned, we fall very much short of that standard. That's necessary to remember. Because if we don't understand what the standard is, we are likely to abuse the whole thing and interpret and misinterpret the whole thing and cause confusion. That is why everybody is claiming they're all following Vedic literature, following Vedic culture. But when it comes to the reality, there is very few. And it is like Indra is changing the dress all the time. We change the dress and we say, this is what I'm doing. That shouldn't happen. Because if that happens, then the whole purpose is lost in that. So it is necessary to remember what Krishna has said in the Bhagavatam and to always focus on based on that. Otherwise it causes problem.
In this case, does Krishna accept what's happening? How we are living?
No, certainly not. What our lifestyle is not conducive for Krishna consciousness. Our present lifestyle is absolutely not conducive. But because Krishna knows the situation is like this, Krishna has also given some concessions in this our life, that Varnashrama Dharma, Krishna knows that completely one day it will collapse, which has collapsed already, doesn't exist. So Krishna says that if you are in that situation, the only thing what you can do, the least what you can do, is simply chant my name. Simply chant the holy name, refrain from sinful activities, and purify yourselves in that way. And if you do that sincerely, and follow these few things what Krishna has instructed in the Bhagavatam, life will become somewhat tolerable And at the end, there will be some success from that spiritually. This is how much guarantee Krishna has offered in the Bhagavatam. That you can't do everything what Krishna has said in the, it's not possible. We don't have the strength to do it, nor do we have a society today which is capable of living, which is capable of doing things like that. Because what some of the instructions for brahmacharis and sannyasis and all is hardly followed. It's not possible to do it. Those are practical difficulties. But important thing is to realize that this is the standard, what Krishna has said in Varnashrama Dharma. That we should know. So that we are always aware that what we are doing is not enough. That feeling will keep us going in our spiritual life. Otherwise we'll think, oh, I have done enough in my life. Oh, I am doing the right thing. I have done everything. This will set in. That is a kind of a damage in spiritual life. Because with that, the desire for going back to spiritual world will go from one's heart. So if that desire has to be there inside, manishyatvam, mumukshatvam, mahapurusha samshrayaha, these are the three things which instigates a person to think about going back to the spiritual world. What is that? First, getting a human body. Because in human body, you can think these things, that human body is capable of providing this opportunity to going back to the spiritual world. Manishyatvam, mumukshatvam. Mumukshatvam means a strong desire for getting out of this cycle of birth and death. Because karma is binding us and holding us very strongly. No one can escape from that strong control of the karma, laws of karma. So to escape from that, there has to have a strong desire inside. That is known as mumukshatvam. So manishyatvam, mumukshatvam. And the third thing is mahapurusha samshrayaha. An opportunity to come to contact with a great soul like Srila Prabhupada and so many other great personalities who have understood this message and who have practically translated it into their own life. So these opportunities are very, very rare, these three things. So when one gets those three things, immediately one should take to it rather than delaying it anymore. And when one takes to it, one should know what one is doing. And for that, it's necessary to understand it from the Bhagavatam. So I think, yeah. If we talk about women, it will cause a lot of problems. So, because that is how far we are from Vedic culture as far as women are concerned. So I will stop there, and I think it's clear what I'm talking about. Women's role in the society, what the Vedic literature talks about and what it is today, is poles apart. So what can you do? What can be done? It has come to this stage. Yeah. And this is not today this question has come up in the West, because it's much more affecting the people in India than in the West. Because there was a culture which existed for thousands of years where women's role were defined very clearly what that role was and on which the life was based on, the life carried on. But due to circumstances and the influence of the age, what we are living in today, that has all gone and it is changing so fast everywhere in the world. Now, more than discussing anything further than that, it's simply to understand that the Kali's influence is basically on our mind and intelligence. That's where Kali sits. Kali Yuga, we say Kali Yuga, Kali Yuga. What is this Kali Yuga? Kali is nothing but the influence on our intelligence. That today we find we are willing to accept something which is causing so much destruction in this in the human species as good things. That's how this whole liberation movement and so many other things what we are preaching today, equality and all this rubbish what we are talking about. And this is, we are seeing right in front of our eyes how the whole fabric of the society has been completely devastated by this, practicing this modern philosophy concepts on the role of women and role of men and all that. But There was a system already in place by Krishna's arrangement. This is what you do in two different bodies. In the male body you function like this, in the female body you function like this. Together you execute and get out of this cycle of birth and death. That was Krishna's instruction. So long as we don't do it, we will have problems, and these problems will get worse as time passes. That is how it's explained. And this role of women we can discuss for a long, long time. It takes so many things. We can take one after the other and analyze it, and you will see every now and then that it has only brought unhappiness to everybody, both for the men as well as women, by following, creating all these new kind of relationships, understanding of relationships. So I think that's all I can say about it today. Okay, we'll stop there. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
The truth is, which is in one Krishna. Doesn't mean you have to forget your ego.